Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello and welcome to episode 18 of Shifting the Paradigm. I'm Christina Gomez, your hostess for this next hour of UFO Shenanigans, where we look and think outside the proverbial box, jump down rabbit holes, and where the red pill is actually a red Tic Tac. If you haven't had your paradigm shifted, get ready. I've been looking forward to having Mr. Lou Elizondo as my guest on Shifting the Paradigm for many months now. If ever there's someone who's really shifted the paradigm for so many, it is Lou. A lot has happened since our last interview for the debrief. The DoD UAP report was released on June 25th with a tremendous amount of mainstream media attention and fanfare. And then within a week, it was old news. Not just the report, but the entire topic. We went from daily news coverage, speculation, special reports, and features to practically zero coverage in the space of a week. And it was back to the old news headlines. Here we are, 2 months later, and it seems like kind of nothing has changed. I mean, what gives? Did a lid come down on the entire topic, preventing any more coverage? Or is it just the same old news cycle recycling itself? What's going on behind the scenes? And what are we not hearing about? These questions and more we'll be covering here today on Shifting the Paradigm with Lou Elizondo. Lou, welcome to the show and for joining us here today. It's so exciting.
Christina, thank you so much for having me. Thank you to your wonderful audience. You know, it's always such a blast always talking with you. I'm wondering, I mean, can I just move into your studio and we have a chat every week, maybe every day?
Let me tell you, I live in a really, really tiny dorm room, so you might just be like a little cramped.
I'm really short for the record. So I've always told people one of the advantages in the military that if, you know, you're in combat, usually because I'm so short, the bullet just goes right over my head. And hits the guy behind me. Now, if they're like aiming for the knees, I'm done. I'm going to take it right between the eyes and I'm done. But thank you so much for having me, Christina. This is great. Again, apologies for not making last week. I was stuck in the Denver airport. I guess there was a storm and it backed up all the aircraft and I was stuck there for about 2 days straight. And no, I didn't get a hotel. I just toughed it out. And yeah, it wasn't. By the time I got home, I hadn't shaved. I was stinky. I was grumpy and just, you know, all sorts of miserable. But thank you for rescheduling me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we get it. Life happens, you know, and you can't always plan for it. I did want to mention that my last guest on the show was Harvard professor Avi Loeb, and he told me he appeared on over 1,100 interviews over the course of 6 months. But I've got to believe you have him beat because months running to the 180-day report, you were either on TV or in a podcast or being interviewed by someone several times a day. And then the report dropped and everything has gone quiet. But I quickly want to ask you, how many appearances do you think you've done in general?
Oh, well, you know, Christina, it's not so much a question of how many I've done, it's how many I've really enjoyed, and I really enjoy yours. So yours is one of my favorite. The rest don't really matter. I don't even really keep count. And I certainly appreciate the compliment. Yeah, it was a lot of media exposure. Now, you know, you said
Absolutely.
something really interesting, and I've been dying to address this, and I'm going to address it on your show.
All
People
right.
say, you know, it's crickets out there. No one's saying anything. There's no news coverage. Yes, precisely, because real work is being done right now. I'm in the middle of writing a thought piece, you know, and I compare disclosure to three things: nuclear submarines. I compare it to dark energy, and I compare it to earthquakes. Why is that? Because all of these things occur and exist, and you can't see it. You can't see it. You can't really. It's hard to detect. But just because you can't see something doesn't mean that there's not something happening beyond what you can observe. You know, earthquakes, the same thing, right? You have all this energy and movement occurring right beneath your feet in the Earth's crust. And it's only when there's a sudden release of energy does everybody now feel the effects, right? Well, it's the same thing with disclosure. There's a lot of things happening behind the curtain right now, a lot of exciting things that are really taking this conversation to the next level. Unfortunately, the general public doesn't see it, because some of these things haven't yet come quite to fruition. But make no mistake, Christina, we are absolutely 110% engaged, and I think your audience is going to be absolutely thrilled when some of this stuff comes to light, because you know what? It is going to have a big media splash. There is 60 Minutes that's going to be replaying their episode on this topic again this Sunday, and they're doing that because they tend to do repeats. Their best shows, they do repeats when on during off season, but there's a reason why they're doing it, and I think there's a lot happening. I don't think actually I know, because we're part of some of that those efforts. But again, there's a lot going on. Just like I talked about earthquakes, you know, a nuclear submarine. This is a if you will, a submarine is a boat basically that goes underwater. That's the size of a skyscraper, right? And yet it's completely invisible. It's all under the surface, and you only know it's there when it breaks the surface or, you know, bad things happen. But that's very much, again, like what we're doing now. There's a lot happening subsurface. I'll discuss with you, if you want, some of those things. And also, if I may do a real quick mea culpa, the last 2 months I've been a little bit missing in action. And I will share with you, I had a pretty significant health scare. I think I mentioned maybe on Twitter once that I was dealing with some health issues. It was a little more serious than that. I was told by my doctor when they were diagnosing a hiatal hernia that I have, and they found what they thought was cancer on my kidney, and they were trying to figure out, do we remove the kidney? Do we try localized surgical debridement? Do we do chemo? Do we do radiation? And so for a month and a half or so, it was a pretty intense ride in the Elizondo house. And so I kept quiet about that for several reasons. A, what I don't want is you know, a bunch of people on Twitter to feel sorry for me or start worrying about me. You know, I can handle myself. And then two, we didn't have the full diagnosis yet. It turns out, as of just a few days ago, I was informed that what that made this mass they called large mass on my kidney, my left kidney, may in fact be just a large benign cyst, which is it's not super common. Basically, when they did the tests, all the tests were saying no, this is cancer. But then the last test they did, they were very surprised. They said, actually, you know what? This may not look like cancer. This may just be something that's quite benign. So I'm still undergoing tests right now. Right now, things are looking much, much better than they did just a few days ago. But I wanted to share that with you and your audience, and apologize for being a little bit missing in action. I wasn't trying to be neglectful or ignore anybody. It just I you know I had to take care of some health issues for sure.
my gosh, my heart's racing. Life can really suck, and that's really awful to hear, regardless if it's cancer or a cyst. And you know, I'll be praying for you, and I'm sure everyone else will be as well, because you're a hero to us, to the UFO community.
You know what? People have gone through a hell of a lot more than I have, and had to go through a lot more. So the good news is, you know, please don't feel sorry for me. I'm doing great. The best news that I could have heard was given to me. So, you know, prognosis is actually quite good. Worst comes to worst.
Surgery, right?
You know, yeah. I mean, worst comes to worst, look, take the kidney. Don't care. I got another one. You know, I mean, at this point, they've taken so many organs out of me, you know, what the hell's a kidney, right? So, you know, it could be worse. But anyways, just wanted to share that with you and say thank you for everyone's patience. And,
Lou, what other organs do you not have?
Oh my goodness. Gallbladder. I've got my fake knees. I've got, inguinal hernia, hiatal hernia. I can't remember if it was Afghanistan or Iraq, one of these wonderful garden spots that I went to a couple times. When I came back, I was really suffering internally. I'm like, man, there's something not right with me. They went in, and when they were repairing the inguinal hernia, the surgeon, she said to me, when I woke up, she said, look, I don't know what happened, but forgive me for being kind of colorful here, but she said, it looked like a rat had chewed inside of you. And I said, what? She said, yeah, but you know, we saw some scar tissue. So we're presuming that whatever, you had some sort of parasitic infection that was really doing some damage in there, but it appears that whatever it was, you beat it, but it's caused, you know, quite a bit of havoc inside. And so, I was dealing with that. I had tuberculosis, for years on medication. We had, we got exposed to anthrax. So then we had to deal with, you know, Cipro. And so I think over time that kind of takes an effect on the body.
Yeah, absolutely. That's insane.
A lot of our brave men and women in uniform, you know, come back now, and it's not just the PTSD. There really is, you know, some physical, challenges that our folks in uniform are coming back with. So again, I had it a lot better than most. So for the love of God, please don't feel sorry for me. I'm doing great. I feel great. Nothing that a cup of Cuban coffee won't fix.
There you go. It's always the coffee. It always helps out. I quickly want to say to everyone in the chat that I have received over 200 questions via
Reddit.
We're going
to answer every one of them.
In an hour. Well, less than an hour now. 45 minutes. We're going to answer all 200. No, we're not. But I got them on Reddit, Twitter, Facebook, email, Instagram in the last 2 weeks. And of course, you know, I will not be able to ask all of them. I picked a few of the ones that I found the most intriguing and original to ask, along with my own. I also want to say that I can't follow the live chat accurately while we are streaming here live. So if you have a burning hot original question to ask, then please help out this channel by doing a super chat, which will of course grab my attention from the rest of the chat and will be asked. So believe it or not, we had a super chat question already given to us by Sowilo R at around 1 p.m., right? So like 5 hours ago, for $20 supporting the channel. Thank you so much, Sowilo. And the question is, I'm condensing this question into one here. So it says, can we understand the psychology of those operating the UAP through observation, giving us signs that they enjoy toying with their pilots, even mischievously, therefore showing that their evolution could possibly be similar to ours? What are your thoughts on that?
Wow. First of all, I've never been asked that question before. Thank you very much. Very insightful.
Good question.
You know, the problem with this topic is because we're human beings, we tend to assign anthropomorphic characteristics to everything in nature. Every time I play with my dog, what I do, oh, you're such a good little boy, right? And you know, I'm connecting with a sentient being. And as such, I ascribe to it human characteristics. Now, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but I think we tend to do that the same thing when we're talking about the UAP topic. We tend to ascribe human motivations, human intent, human psychology, sociology as well, to this thing, because what we see are observations there that defy our current understanding. And in order for us to better rationalize what we are experiencing and seeing, it's easier for us to put it in a nice, neat little box that we understand. But you know, Christina, you said it in the beginning of the show here about thinking outside the box. By the way, I love that part of your show in the beginning, that intro. But we have to force ourselves to think outside of the box. In fact, we have to presume there's no box at all. And that's hard to do because it goes against everything we are as a human species. Whether or not there is an intent to toy with the human race, it's certainly possible. But then you have to presume that whatever it is more human, more similar to us than perhaps we realize. And you know, that in itself is kind of a scary notion. Are we dealing with something else that's very similar to human beings as far as thought process and motivation? I certainly hope not, because we tend to be a pretty unpredictable, violent species. I'm not sure I would want another human-like species having access to that type of technology. Because they may do human type things, right? They may react in ways that we as humans do, and it's not always a good thing. So I guess my question is it possible? Yeah, it's absolutely possible. And they could be toying with us, but it's also possible that they're not, and that we are looking at these observations of performance and the way they're maneuvering, and we are ascribing it attributes that may not necessarily be there. But it is the only point of reference that we have. And so therefore we ascribe these human type attributes.
John has a question. Thank you so much, John, for the 50. Wow. He says, Lou, will there definitely be anything definitively non-human enough to shut down all debunkers coming anytime soon to put on the front page of the New York Times? The 23-minute high def video, anything we haven't heard about yet, we can't lose momentum.
No, I think you're right. We can't lose momentum, and I don't think we are. I've mentioned this before. We are in a marathon relay race. We're not in a sprint. Let's just reflect very quickly on the last 3 years, just the last 3 years. Okay. Let me, if I may, remind your audience just how much we collectively, all of us, your audience included, have been able to accomplish in just 3 years. First of all, you have the acknowledgement that the UFO program called ATIP existed and was real. You also have the acknowledgement that those three videos were absolutely real and they were taken from DoD weapon systems. You also have the acknowledgement that we have no idea what they are, that they are truly unidentified aerial phenomena. You have the establishment of a UAP task force, not unidentified aerial balloons or drones, but unidentified aerial phenomenon. You have classified briefings being provided to Congress. Then you, on top of that, you have briefings being provided to the President of the United States and the President admitting that he received briefings on this topic. Then on top of that, you have a 180-day report, which I suspect we're going to talk about a little bit today, and what that means. And on top of that, you have a signed document by the DepSecDef that came out and said, hey, look, Kathy Hicks saying, we need to develop a strategy, a long-term strategy, not just something to answer this 180-day report, but long-term going into the future, we need to provide resources, assets, and talent behind it. Then you have recently in the new latest legislation language saying that not only do we now want a 180-day report, but we want a report every 90 days. And oh, by the way, that includes anything that you haven't reported to us before. So get ready, because there's a lot of information coming out. And then, oh, on top of that, you have an IG evaluation and an IG investigation on the handling of this topic within the Department of Defense and the intelligence community. So that has all happened in the last 3 years. In the last 3 years, you have countries like Japan coming out and establishing a bilateral relationship with the United States government for the sole purpose of sharing UAP-related information. You know, that ain't a bad track record, folks, and you all made that happen. So yeah, I get it. We're waiting for that next dopamine hit, but let's not lose sight of how far we really have come, and where we need to go. The last thing we want to do is prematurely do something that is not quite ready for prime time, and it winds up working counter to what we're trying to do. So the good news is there's a lot happening, and there's going to be a lot more happening. You know, I said we're firmly into third gear right now, and we are. There's some things in the next 2 and 3 months that I'm personally involved with, and my colleagues like Chris Mellon, that I think, you know, if the public were to find out, they'd be pretty surprised and extremely excited. You know, we're moving right along.
I quickly just want to tell people that are listening, because we have quite an audience today, and I want to say some super chats are actually falling off my list. So if your question gets skipped, please just paste it again as a reminder without the super chat and a copy in the moderator name, just because we're getting a lot of things happening right now. So Russell has a question. And before I get to Russell, Charles says, tell Lou I love him. Stay strong and stay somber.
Thank you, Charles. And also a big thank you to someone, I guess, who put on Twitter an artist rendition of me. Far too kind. Thank you so much. You certainly drew me better than I really look in real life. So I thank you for that. I couldn't really pronounce the handle. It had some characters in there I didn't recognize, but a little alien head as an icon. And anyways, just wanted to say thanks.
Oh, that's cute. You have some really big fans. You have people rooting for you. John Russell asks, also, thank you so much for the 50. That's amazing. What has been your most memorable or dramatic UFO, UAP, paranormal experience?
Wow.
Just lay it on us, Lou.
I have to be careful. You know, great question.
Should I pass some drinks over to you?
I think that's a question that needs to be answered probably on its own podcast, where we're going to dedicate the entire time to it. Look, I've lived an extraordinary life. I've told people I'm an unextraordinary man living through extraordinary times. I've been privy to things that I don't understand. I'll just put it as simple as that. This is a strange universe we live in. It's a wondrous universe we live in. It's a huge universe we live in, both at the grand scale of things and even at the micro and nano levels. It's you know, there are, when you say what's the greatest experience I've had or most wondrous experience involving UAP and or paranormal, that's a loaded question. And again, that's a question that I at some point I'll probably share. It wasn't one incident. You know, for those who know who I am and my involvement with folks like Hal Pudoff and Kit Green, you know, those ties go way back. And you know, there's things I've been exposed to that I can't explain as a scientist. You know, with my background, you know, in microbiology and immunology. And I'm careful not to really talk about it publicly, because it's really easy to go down that rabbit hole of the woo. And as interesting and intriguing as it may be, it can also serve as a distraction, because at the end of the day, they're just my observations and my own experiences. And I wouldn't want that to taint the collection of information and analysis that needs to be done in the UAP topic. You know, a lot of the best reporters, you have no idea what political affiliation they are. You don't know if they're conservative or liberal. You don't know what religion they are, because they try to remain objective. And even though they do have personal beliefs, you know, it's less relevant to the pursuit of truth. For me, ultimately, this is about truth. And, you know, there's a lot of truth out there. And, you know, one just has to talk to indigenous people here in our country that have been here for millennia. They have incredible, fascinating stories. You know, I think there's a lot to be said. And I hope one day I can share some of my experiences in a way that people aren't going to judge me or judge anybody else I was with. The problem is we're too early in the conversation right now. It's too much of a distraction. Too many people need to come out of the shadows to continue this conversation. And by me going into my own personal experiences, could hinder that process. And so, with all due respect, love the question. Very sincere, and I'm really struggling because I really want to have this conversation, but probably now is not the time, unfortunately.
Well, we will all be waiting when you do tell the story. We'll all be there, like biting our nails, being like, "Oh my gosh, he's gonna tell it!" So we're excited for the future.
Got the
when
popcorn
it comes to you.
And 3D sunglasses, right? And,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. My next question is. Obviously, the mainstream media has shifted its focus since the report dropped. But to me, you know, I've been shocked at how quiet they are on the topic of UFOs now. In your opinion, do you think this is because an official lid of silence has been dropped, or is it just a natural curve of disinterest?
No, it's neither. We've turned the dial down. We had the oven cooking, and we had to get it up to operating temperature of 500 degrees. I don't need to continue that gas right now to go up to 800 degrees. We need to keep it at 500. And sometimes you have to turn back the gas a little bit to keep the oven temperature constant. Remember, this is a long game. You don't want to waste all your magic bullets, your rounds, prematurely. Everything has to be very strategic. This is a long-term campaign. And this isn't just, this isn't the Super Bowl where we, have a halftime show and you have pyrotechnics and whatnot. This is real life. And what we're trying to do is keep this conversation going and letting people catch their breath. There's a lot of things happening in the world right now that demand our attention. There's things like Afghanistan, there's things like COVID and the new Delta variant. We have to let people catch their breath, and we can't be selfish and just dominate and consume the narrative 24 hours a day, because people will get fatigued and eventually they'll get annoyed. Again, this is something that comes in waves. I've said this before. For the last 3 years, we're not in the business of satisfying idle curiosity. We're in the business of disclosure. And to do disclosure right, you have to be very methodical about it, very strategic about it. But know that there's a lot happening right now. Some of us have deliberately made the decision to throttle back a little bit and let everything else catch up, and then continue to move forward, if that makes sense. And by the way, I know I'm going to be upsetting some people out there saying, you don't have the right to do that. Well, it's not just me. I mean, anybody can get up here and champion the cause if they want to, but it's a strategy we collectively have chosen to take because quality matters, right? Who in the media is presenting the information? What is the evidence that they're presenting? The last thing you want to do is make some proclamation and not have the evidence to back it up, because that will hurt disclosure.
Oh, yeah. And all of us definitely want quality over quantity. Do you want to have a McDonald's burger, or do you want to have a really good burger?
Yeah. Okay. Do you want Ruth's Chris, or, do you want not? Do you want something else?
John has another question, and he says, "Lou, your thoughts on Sam Harris saying he and his science colleagues are getting classified better videos from the CIA that show it's non-human, and he says they need his advice for how to break the truth to the public."
Who's Sam Harris, if I may ask? That's
your
a serious question.
Hopefully John can clarify that.
Well,
because
I
also don't know.
If you're receiving briefing from the CIA, then clearly you're obviously in the Scattered Castles and JWICS database, right? So I should be able to pull you up and see if you have a top secret clearance and where your tickets are being held, and see that you're having these meetings with these individuals that you claim you have. If you do, great. Welcome to the party. It's about time. But if you're just talking crap and full of crap and just, making nonsensical claims without evidence, then I don't know what to tell you. I don't know who Mr. Harris is, but that doesn't mean necessarily that he's not telling the truth. I just personally don't know him, but I can certainly find out if this person's having briefings, with the CIA. I can't imagine that they're going to be asking somebody who's not connected to the National Security Council or a think tank on how to have this conversation with the American people.
When you let us know, or when you find out, please let us know. Sen sure. Zubin has a question, and I'm sorry we're going through these so quickly.
Let's go.
People are just like, they want to ask you a lot of things. So They say, hi, Christina. Perhaps you could ask him if he thinks these UAPs travel using some sort of warp drive and that way probably avoid the massive G-force.
Wow. Senzubin, is that how you pronounce that?
I'm gonna guess so. I like the name. I like the
Yeah,
name
I do too. Name. Yeah, I love it. You know, that's certainly one of the hypotheses. I'd say probably at this point more of a theory than even a hypothesis. There's a lot of mathematical equation. In fact, you know what? Give me a second. I'm going to show you something. Hold on.
All right. Guys, I want to say thank you for everyone that is watching, that has questions, that even sent in questions through the emails, Reddit, Twitter, through everything. He's okay, a great guy to ask questions, too.
One of the books that we had in ATIP that I looked at a lot was this book here, okay? And it's Frontiers of Propulsion Science. And you can see in there that it's some names you might recognize there. And when you open this book up, it's really just a huge amount of mathematical equations. Mathematical equations and whatnot. This is important because this is exactly how we look at the potential of what advanced propulsion might look like and what those signatures might look like. And so is it possible that these things are warping space-time? That certainly seems, you know, to be a really, really good theory. Certainly the mathematical equations and scientific models suggest that.
GD has a question. Thank you so much for the 20. And they say, one, does the IAA, parentheses, FY 2022, require the UAPTF/NASIC to report to Congress on UAP events pre-FY 22?
Yes, it does. That's the key. Every 90 days and whatever you haven't reported in the past since the 1940s is supposed to be reported to Congress.
Okay. Second question they have is, did the USG discover the exotic matter? Pure USG custody? That's a good question.
I have to be very careful how I answer any questions about exotic material or anything like that. I have said for the record, it is my belief that the U.S. government is in possession of it. I am not at liberty to elaborate any more than that, unfortunately.
Of course.
At least not now.
But when that does happen, I'll have to ask you again.
Absolutely.
The last thing is, what are your thoughts on the UK Condon report, you know, plasma on radar, et cetera?
Yeah, Condon report. Well, look, you know, there's a lot of prosaic explanations for a lot of things. And at the end of the day, report that we had to Congress, 180-day report, there were 144 incidents and only one of them was solved. One. And right. I think more importantly, that of the 144 incidents, 142 of them were in the last year and a half alone and by the Navy only. So that's important because in a year and a half in just involving the Navy, you had 142 incidents. And oh, by the way, we only figured one of those out. And then furthermore, in the report, it says specifically that most of the reporting never went reported because of a fear of stigma and some sort of retribution, professional retribution, which, by the way, ask me how I know. It is real. And so if you look at that, just do the simple math, and let's just say 10% of these incidents that were reported, that means that the U.S. Navy experienced over 1,400 incidents in the last year and a half alone. Most of them went unreported. We have no idea what they are. And that's just the Navy. So what about the Air Force? What about the Army, right? What about everybody else? And not just the last year and a half, but what about the last decade? What about the last three decades? What about the last 70 years? So great, great question.
Chuck has a question. Thank you so much. Also, your profile pic makes me smile. He says, Christina, Jimmy had a guest on Wednesday on Jolly. Excuse me. She is ex-military and recently did a press conference in D.C. announcing her intentions to revisit an alien base in the Mojave Desert. Can you ask Lou about this? Sounds amazing.
You know, great. You know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. You know, all I got to say is good luck. You know, I hope she's right. you know, I probably wouldn't quit my day job just right now to go, you know, run in the desert and try to find an alien base somewhere in the Mojave Desert. I think there's a lot of people who want to be part of a narrative. I don't know Anjali, just like I don't know, you know, the other individual from Area 51, you know, Bob Lazar. Everybody asks me, what do you think of Bob Lazar? I don't, I can't, I never met the gentleman. You know, I don't have an opinion.
I don't have an
opinion of Anjali. You know, I think it's very careful when you look at someone's career, you have to look at the nuances. As a government employee, you have a rank and you have authority. As a contractor, you provide services to the government and the customer. You know, it's important that people, like if you were to see my resume, which I think is public, I don't know, but at some point, if you sure will be, you can see precisely where I was assigned, what I did, what my roles and responsibilities were, and the type of duties I performed. You know,
We are going to go actually on a quick break, and then I want to come right back into some more questions. So everyone hang tight.
Perfect.
And let's play the clip.
Hi, I'm Micah Hanks, and let me tell you something. I support Christina Gomez as a Patreon subscriber, and here's why you should too. She brings all of her unique insights to a whole new generation, and all while she's also going through college. Listen, support Christina, become a Patreon subscriber today. You won't regret it.
All righty.
Hey, for the record, I agree with that, Christina. I know books are expensive, putting my kid through college. You know, and I know you do a lot of this on your own. So let me, if I can, second that motion. For those of you out in the audience, no, I don't get a penny for this. I don't ever charge for these type of things. But Christina has been working her ass off and has done, by the way, a fantastic job in carrying the torch forward. You know, I think that's a pretty simple ask. If you'd like to have access to this type of information and this type of material, you know, it takes time and it takes her away from doing things that she could otherwise be doing to put, you know, food on the table and pay the rent. You know, she could be working somewhere and not doing this for us. So I agree with that. You know, if you can help out any way you can, you're helping the team.
Thank you. And I have so much more planned for this channel. I have so many projects planned. So if you become a Patreon, you'll become a partner and a partner with me, and you'll be able to have access with so many behind the scene videos and pictures and so many extra goodies, like the graphics I make for my channel. I can do that for you as well, for those that are watching. So it's going to go a long way. It's going to go an absolutely long way. Now let's jump back into the questions. So let me find it, because I know I'm getting lost. But CJ says, thank you so much, by the way. He says, I'm a huge, huge fan of Lou. Same. And you were my introduction to UFOs, and I still can't get enough. Thanks. Do you have any UFO books you recommend?
Ooh, boy, that's a loaded question. A good question. You know, I hate making recommendations because different people are going to read different books and take the information differently. There was a book that was given to me by a gentleman named Dean Johnson in Washington, D.C. when I was there with Chris, my colleague, Chris Mellon. And, you know, we've had the privilege of speaking with him a few times. And he shared with me a book. And, you know, people share with me a lot of books all the time. You got to read this. You got to read this. And I do. But he suggested one, and it's a little science fiction novella. It's about three stories in this little tiny book, and it's called Chains of the Sea. Not Chains in the Sea, Chains of the Sea. And it is the second story in that book. It's a short story, maybe 30, 40, 50 pages long. But it is a wonderful little story because it provides a completely different potentiality of what this means. Now, I don't necessarily subscribe to it. Let me just say that. But what I'm saying is it forces you to think. Remember, we talk about the box, right? This forces you to think outside of the box, a completely different paradigm of what something might be, what the phenomenon might be, what paranormal might be, what our interaction might be. And I found it really original, and it really forced me to think and reconsider and recalibrate my own position on the topic of UAP. And so if there was a book I would recommend, it would be that. Again, I don't make a penny from it. I couldn't tell you. Probably not very much money. You can probably download it for free, I imagine. But it's I think it's a unique perspective that's certainly worth at least just reading, because it forces you to think about things in a slightly different way.
NMUAP has a question. Thank you so much for the 50. That's amazing. It says, aliens don't scare me. The Chinese and the Russians do, unfortunately. Should I be nervous that some of this may be these adversaries?
Well, it's certainly a potential. It appears to be exceedingly unlikely. Because we've been seeing this technology since the late 1940s. And it's, by the way, documented in official U.S. government documentation. So we've been dealing with these things. And of course, everybody knows about the Tic Tac in 2004. But they might be surprised to know that there were other Tic Tac sightings going back to the 60s and the 50s where they were described as white flying butane tanks, right, 40 feet long, or white flying throat lozenges. We were describing these things based upon the genre at the time. But they were still performing exactly the same way that Commander Fravor and Alex Dietrich witnessed in 2004. So if there is a country that has this beyond next generation technology, and they had it since the late 1940s, we're in real trouble, right? And so I think the likelihood of that is exceedingly small. If you look at where the world was, let's just take the United States, which was probably the most technologically advanced at the time. Where were we in the late 40s? Well, we were just unlocking the secrets of the atom. We were just entering the jet age, and we were still decades away from going into space. That's a pretty big pill to swallow. If you want to consider that some country at the time that, you know, had the technology of horse and ox pulling buggies. It's really unlikely. The signature and the amount of money and resources it would take to develop that technology and then keep it secret for this long, I think is highly improbable.
We have another question, and it says, and I don't know if I'm showing it, but I'll end up showing it. But the question is, the devastation effects of climate change seem to be upon us as a species, and if not dealt with, may lead to mass extinction events in the near future. Has the connection between the UAP and climate change been discussed or considered at all? Great question.
You know, yeah, that's really interesting. No, not in an official sense. It's been bantered about by some people who've kind of quietly expressed that opinion that, hey, maybe the two are related. But there's never been any earnest study into that. Not that I'm aware of, certainly not with ATIP. But, you know, it's interesting. It really is an interesting question. And maybe that's something that maybe we should consider. I think why not?
And that was somewhat of a popular question when I had posted it online. I did get a few questions on something in between those lines. John has another question. Thank you. And says, Lou, some high level people have said that the public should not know the truth, can't handle it. But they're already been way more than enough to admit by higher ups to admit it's non-human. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, boy, this is going to get me in trouble too. I hate going back and forth on this, and I do. I'm the worst offender at this because I think that the American people and the world deserve to know the truth. I think, you know, whether you can handle it or not is irrelevant. We can handle a lot of things. We handle the fact that there's countries that want to nuke us. There's countries out there that you know, involve themselves in terrorism, want to end our way of life. You know, we can handle a lot. We're about to handle a hurricane that's barreling down right now on New Orleans, as terrible as it is. So we can handle the truth. But then, of course, I turn to social media and I see sometimes the comments I get against me. And, you know, I scratch my head and say, well, you know what, maybe they can't handle the truth. Maybe, you know, here they're shooting the messenger. I'm just trying to give them what they wanted. And you know, now I'm the bad guy and the enemy. And I can't tell you how many times I slam the computer shut and say, you know what? screw them. They can't handle the truth. They don't deserve the truth. Let them live in darkness. And you know, maybe in 100 years I'll be ready. I'm being honest with you. But then, of course, you know, I'll have a chance to kind of sit down for a second, take a breath, and you know, collect my thoughts and say, okay, you know, enough of the pity party. Let's get back to work. Roll our sleeves up and let's continue to have this conversation. So I get it. I do think that people can handle the truth. I'm committed to the truth. In fact, I don't think you can have freedom without truth. The two go hand in hand. You can't claim to be a free society if you don't pursue the truth and you don't provide the truth to your citizens. You're just at that point, it's just propaganda and tyranny.
UAP has a question, and it says, did Lou ever visit Skinwalker Ranch? And if he did he experience anything unusual?
You know, I'm going to let somebody else, you know, Skinwalker Ranch is a fascinating place. And, you know, I will tell you, there's definitely things, in my opinion, that go bump in the night. I know it's probably not very pleasant to think about, but I've seen enough evidence to suggest that, you know, there's something going on there. I would recommend talking to Brandon Fugel, only because he's the new owner of that facility. I am certainly not qualified. A lot of that work was done under the auspices of AWSAP and under Bob Bigelow and the former director before me. They're certainly more qualified to tell you what they think about Skinwalker Ranch. Am I aware of some pretty weird things happening there? Absolutely. Am I aware of some of these things happening to my own people? Yeah, I am. But that's,
when are you going to write a book, Lou? When are you going to write a book?
No, I want to read my book.
it would already be a New York bestseller. Preston has a question. Says, Lou, grateful for your dedication to this topic. Can you assure us this is a true unknown and not related to Nemesis / Palladium type programs?
Yeah, Palladium. So he's Palladium, talking about he or she is Preston is talking about electronic warfare. The problem with electronic warfare, it works off the electromagnetic spectrum. And I can't go into too much detail because, you know, we get into some sensitive stuff. But the bottom line is you can spoof a radar, but you can't spoof the human eye. That's just the bottom line. So any type of electronic warfare, yes, you can fool a radar into thinking an object is either there or it's not there or there's a bunch of them. But you can't fool the human eye and you can't fool gun camera footage. You know, so therein lies the problem. The problem is that our pilots are encountering these things. The problem is that our sailors are encountering these things and our soldiers and our airmen. So it's simply not a viable option to say this is Nemesis or Palladium because it doesn't explain the other aspects of this phenomenon. It doesn't explain the eyewitness testimony and accounts and the actual footage that we've been privy to.
Absolutely. Another question is, hi, Lou, if you were a civilian scientist and could place a limited amount of sensor systems around the globe, where would you focus on placing them in order to capture data on UAP? Thanks.
So I will share something with you. I'm not going to, I won't go into too much detail, but we're looking at that right now. And you'd be surprised. It's a lot easier than you might think. You might not even need a whole bunch of sensors. You might just need one. And you might need to know where to put it and then how to cooperate that data with other data. I'm going to do a very polite pass on that because my hope is that in the not too distant future, I can share the precise answer to that. And I don't use this term very often, but I think it's going to blow your mind. I think you guys are going to go, oh my God, it's been there all along.
It's so cute when you have like a good question, but you can't answer it. You'll do like this really cute little smirk and you're like, I know, and I want to say it, but I can't.
You know, which is really why I wasn't a good intelligence officer because my poker face is terrible. I just, you know, I get really excited because some of these questions are so wonderful. I'm like, I just want to tell you. You know, again, we gotta make sure we do this right.
Rich says, and thank you everyone for the super chats. I know I'm not saying thank you, but thank you all so, so much. Rich says, has Lou ever been in the presence of some washing, some machine slash craft?
Yes, a washing machine. I try to avoid it as much as possible, but yes, I've been in front of washing machines before.
Because another question was playing in my head that someone else asked, but some machine slash craft of non-human origin.
Let me go back to the question that I answered before. In my opinion, is it the U.S. government in possession of exotic material? I answered yes to that. I cannot elaborate any more than that. There's very specific reasons why I can't, and I have to honor and acknowledge those reasons and those requests. So for the time being, I'm going to do a polite pass on that question. Very good question. And one question that I hope to be able to discuss a little further at some point.
I want to mention to everyone where I have about 10 minutes for the show. There is going to be an extra 15 minutes for all my Patreon supporters. So this question here by Red Panda Koala is going to be our last question for the day. But I also want to mention, you know, if you had one that you want to ask, what's the answer to that? So here we go. I don't think what I said made sense, but it'll make more sense as we go on. Red Panda Koala says, Lou, do you think Havana syndrome is related to UAP? Sounds like a tip, slide 9.
First of all, a profoundly relevant question. One that I'm not prepared to answer right now. I'm thinking in my mind right now the number of individuals that would be breathing down my neck if I could go into that. You know, there are some very interesting peculiarities. I am not qualified to discuss the nuances of Havana syndrome. I think we are still trying to figure that out. That's all I can say.
Okay. Well, here we go. We do have a few extra minutes. So we have 8 more minutes, and I'm sorry, I misread the time. So we are going to go over a few more. And the last one is like my favorite question of all time. But here we go. Another question is, 94, there was a sighting at a school in Africa where many school children claimed to have seen beings exit a craft, and some were given a message telepathically. The message was that we are destroying our planet. What are your thoughts on that?
Quite possible. You can't disprove it. It's interesting anecdotal data, but at the end of the day, you can't quantify and qualify it. It is personal perception, and that's based on human psychology. I'm not saying it's not relevant. The problem is there's no way to objectively take that data and employ the scientific method to determine the veracity of that information. And so as a result of that, we didn't really include that type of data into our ATIP efforts later on, certainly when I was in charge of the effort, because from a DOD perspective, a Department of Defense perspective, there was no way I could go to a leader in the government and say, hey, sir, hey, ma'am, you know, these kids claim to have telepathic communication with these beings, whatever they may be. That doesn't do anything for the conversation. Doesn't help a leader make a decision one way or the other. So we kept everything that we could, you know, that kept the conversation to that data that can be measured and can be tabulated and can be, you know, if you will, compared to other data that we had and other signatures. Signature data is very important. You know, everything has a signature. This pen, if I throw it in the air, will have a signature. There will be small, discrete changes in the air around it that can be measured. And when you talk about potential telepathic communication, you know, between species, there's no real signature there that you can grab a hold of, or if there is a signature, it's beyond our technology to really do anything with. It's certainly interesting, but it wasn't a focus of us in ATIP, and so therefore I can't really elaborate. Is it possible? Sure. Is it true? Could be. Is it just human interpretation of something? Yeah, there could be that too. I don't know. And therefore, it's probably best that I don't provide my opinion, because it's, at the end of the day, it's unqualified. It's an unqualified opinion that I have.
Another question is, Christopher Mellon has mentioned in several past interviews that UAP activity has been increasing and getting bolder. Is this something you can corroborate? And if so, are you able to share any examples with us today?
It does appear certainly that that the UAP activity seems more provocative. It seems less afraid, less elusive, more in our face. More willing to defy our controlled airspace. That I agree with wholeheartedly. That's a concern for us. But the question with metrics, you always have to be careful, because now we have more people, with these little devices in their hands that have, better technology in them than our best gun camera footage did 15 years ago, right? Best gun cameras FLIR pods. So we have to be careful because there's more people now looking into it. It's like saying for example, a big city, has crime rates have gone up 5%. Well, what does that mean? Is it really that there's more criminals on the street, or does it mean that we have more cops on the street that are catching criminals, or does it mean that we have now a more aggressive DA that's prosecuting criminals, right? So you have to be careful with numbers, because numbers can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. And so that's why, I'm always careful to make a definitive statement that, that UAP activity is increasing. What we can say is that technology is more proliferated. So more people have these devices in their hands and are able to collect. More people are aware of things in our skies, and more people are looking into the skies, which, by the way, means more people are going to misidentify things. So, before we all rush to the conclusion and say, hey, this is great, we have more UFO activity and we're going to see more things. Well, yeah, but we're also going to see a lot more misses as well, because we're going to have a lot more opportunity to misidentify things. Look, Starlink is up there. I was sitting not too long ago on an early evening and watched 52 satellites in a line cross over the horizon. Just 5 years ago, that would have been shocking. And yet here it is. It's just Starlink. So,
It's very normal that people are misidentifying these things, especially now more than ever. And I quickly want to say, Gene, thank you so much. They say, no question, just a thank you for a great show that I'll enjoy listening to a few more times. Sorry about that. But I agree. For people that have watched Lou's interviews, he always drops little things here and there, and you have to listen to it a few times to really catch it. So I agree with you, Gene. My next question is, given everything you've learned, in your opinion, has the intelligence behind the UAP phenomenon already been designated behind closed doors as an external threat, an existing threat?
I think there's two schools of thought. I think definitely from a national security perspective, it's viewed as a potential threat. But let's not confuse potential threat with hostile intent, right? So I've said this before. If I go to an airport and jump on a 737, Southwest flight to Denver, there's not much of a threat there. But if I go onto the runway, the tarmac of that same airport, and get behind that same airplane and put my head behind the engine while it's throttling up, well, now there's a threat. There's a threat to my hearing. There's a threat to my, I'm going to get burned. There's an environmental threat. Is it intentional? Not necessarily. It's just a product of the technology. So I think there's two schools of thoughts on it. When I was in the government, my focus had to be that this is a potential national security threat. But now that I'm outside the government, I'm free to express my own opinion a little bit more. And, I think with every challenge comes opportunity. One only has to look at the Apollo mission in the 1960s and the space race against the Soviet Union, then Soviet Union. Over 6,200 life-changing technologies and industry came out of the result of that little space race. That decade in time where now we have things like the LED light bulb, we have the CAT scan, things that are improving humanity's well-being on this planet and have long outlived their original intent and purpose. So, you know, I tend to be a little bit more optimistic. I don't think everything that's necessarily a threat is an intentional threat. And I think there's always opportunity. You just need to know how to look for it.
And right now, everyone's asking about the 23-minute video. Can you talk about that?
I can't. What I can say is that I was privy to it, many videos. I have to let the government try to do its due diligence. And you know, let's not forget that the Pentagon claimed to erase and destroy all my emails, despite there being a court protective order that restricted that. So they've got some questions they have to answer. And I want to give the U.S. government, the Pentagon, the time necessary to figure that out. You know, there's videos that are very compelling. I've said before that the three videos that came out are probably the least compelling. As compelling as they may be, they're the least compelling. There's some that are pretty extraordinary, but they haven't been released. It's not up to me to release them, and I really can't talk about them until at some point the government decides it wants to, first of all, locate them, and then second of all, provide them.
RG has a question, and they say, does DHS Red Cell ever used UAP simulation events to test U.S. military responses, which may have been confused as real events? And this is going to be the last super chat for today, guys. We are running out of time, but please answer that, Lou.
You know, I got to tell you, I've never been asked that before. That's a fascinating question, one that I'm going to talk to my colleagues about, Chris and some other people back in D.C. You know, that's certainly a possibility. I've personally never considered that before. And that's why I love doing these, because your audience is so sophisticated. They're always coming up with these great questions. And I can't tell you how many times that these questions will come up and I'll go run right back to D.C. and be like, you know, hey, guys, we got to talk. You know, that's great. That's great. I'm not avoiding the question. I simply don't know. But I can tell you this. I promise you this. I will ask the question and I will report back what I find.
And here is our last question for the show. What is one question you haven't been asked but wish you had been? What is it and what's the answer? Because you've done thousands of interviews.
I have, and there's so many questions that still need to be asked. There isn't one that's better than the other, because we're putting together a jigsaw puzzle, right? It's no one piece of that jigsaw puzzle is going to put the whole puzzle together and give you that aha moment. Ah, there it is. Now the whole puzzle comes together. That's not the way it works. All pieces are critical. All pieces are important. I personally don't have the patience to put together a jigsaw puzzle because it drives me crazy, because every single piece is important. What I do is I do what most people do. I kind of categorize them according to shapes. They have straight edges. Okay, these are going to be on the perimeter, and color. Okay, this is probably part of that scene and whatnot. But at the end of the day, there is no piece more important. There is no question. There is no golden question out there that people should say, okay, how do we, you know, if we only ask this question to Lou, then we would have all the answers. That's sadly not the case. All questions are important and all questions should be asked. Is there a question that people should have asked me? You know, I think we're on a great roll. I think the questions that are being asked here tonight were some of the most insightful I've had a chance to answer in a very long time. In fact, I'm kind of surprised, because every single one of your questions are great questions from your audience. You know, usually when I first came out, people were asking me, you know, all sorts of stuff, you know, and some of the questions were, you know, probably a little bit more basic than others.
Let's give an applause to everyone that's watching and put in their questions.
Absolutely.
Thank you, everyone. You were able to answer a lot of them. And like you said, these were questions that haven't been asked. People that were writing these questions have seen your interviews and they were getting frustrated. They're like, why aren't people asking these questions that I want to ask? So I think I was very lucky to be able to host this today and actually have people ask their questions along with the ones that were sent to me prior. And overall, it's it's been such a blessing for you to be here with me today and to have this conversation.
No, I assure you it's the other way around. It is, look, we are only succeed. I've said this before. I'm going to say it again because, you know, I don't know if people don't believe me or what, but look, we're only where we are today because we can collectively have this conversation. The only reason why you can do what you do is because you have an audience that's listening, that's interested. And that's the only reason why I can come out and I can have the conversation I'm having. So at the end of the day, we're only here because of your audience. It's incredible. It's not me. And I don't know how to emphasize that enough. You know, a lot of people kind of look up to me in a way that I frankly don't deserve. I really don't deserve it. The credit goes to your audience and folks like you. And I foot stomped that 1,000 times. And now people say, oh, he's just being, you know, gracious. He's being humble. But it's true. It's absolutely true. We achieved this collectively over the last 3 years because of the hard efforts of everyone right now that's listening. And I can't overstate that enough. When I have conversations in DC, they're watching Twitter. They're watching your show. They're dialing in a pseudo because they don't want to expose themselves. But make no mistake, they're watching your videos. I can't say who it was, but very recently I got an email from a very, very, very senior person. And I said very 3 times because they are very senior. And they said, hey, I saw that interview on this podcast. And you know what? The podcast was yours. It wasn't CNN or Fox News or BBC. It was your podcast. And he said, hey, man, that was great. So, you know, you guys are making a difference. This is it. This is the future. This is how we have this conversation with everyone. And it's not going to be done by a politician, I assure you. Disclosure is only going to happen because of you and your audience. So
by the people.
Yep.
By the people. To you. And I want to say again, thank you for you, Lou, for being here, for all of the super chats, for everyone participating, for all of my Patreon supporters. I do want to let you know that we are going to have an extra 15-minute segment just for the Patreon supporters that will be uploaded later today. So keep an eye out for those that are, or if you want to be one, it really supports my channel and you get to see all the guests, or I think almost all of them, getting like an exclusive 15 minutes as well. And I also want to say, don't forget to like this video, to share it with people that have the same interest, because it wouldn't be possible. This conversation wouldn't be possible if we had a collective mind. And lastly, don't forget to keep your eyes on the skies.